95.5 KLOS and KLOS HD1 Los Angeles.
Gone tomorrow?
That's very true. I'm a musician and I'm here today myself.
That's right. We'd like to welcome Peter Tork. I forgot I put that at the end of the song. Hey, welcome, hey, Peter Tork.
Hey, yay.
To Breakfast with the Beatles.
Wait a minute. Hello, is this thing working? Hello?
Just test habit.
Test,
there you
test
go. Habit. It's working. So good morning, Peter. What time do you usually get up on a Sunday morning?
Gosh, it varies wildly. Anytime? Yeah, basically anytime from 7 to 11.
Nice. So before we talk about the Beatles and the Monkees and your new show, In This Generation, My Life in the Monkees and so much more, I'm originally a Jersey guy, so I want to talk about our mutual association with the Uncle Floyd TV show.
Oh, yes. Oh, yay, Uncle Floyd.
I owned a record store, Peter, called Looney Tunes Records, and we were the official home of the Uncle Floyd show.
We sold all their stuff. Had an endorsement connection with
them? We did. So people would come from, like, Connecticut to buy, you know, a Netto shirt or a Muggsy shirt. Yeah. And we actually hung out. I watched you on the Uncle Floyd show.
I just ran across Looney Skip Rooney the other day.
Did you really?
Yeah, names escape me. Senior moment. There's two things that go. One of them is, I think, the memory. When you get old, but I can't remember.
And you forgot the other one, right? Okay. For those of
you lose your memory, lose your teeth, you lose your memory.
For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, Uncle Floyd was.
Yeah, we're talking about getting old.
It was a TV show for kids, but for like silly adults.
Nominally for kids. It was. They had kids' pictures, you know, and they said the birthdays and so on. But the jokes, the riffs were really very adult. It was very funny.
And he had the greatest bands on. You could just turn the show on. The Ramones would be on, and Blondie would be on, and Squeeze was on, or Peter Tork would be on.
Even I.
Did you know David Bowie wrote a song called Uncle Floyd?
No. Uncle Flood?
Uncle Floyd. He used to watch Floyd. Wow. Bowie was in The Elephant Man on Broadway. Uh-huh. And he made them start the show a half hour later so we could watch the Uncle Floyd show. And this is a cable show. This is like not a national
show. Well, there wasn't any cable in those days, but it was an obscure, way high number UHF channel. 15,
yeah, yeah.
8 or
exactly.
Something like that.
So, just wanted to mention Uncle Floyd real quick. And since this is a Beatles show, let me get it out of the way. Do you recall seeing the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, Peter?
I do. I didn't have TV, but my grandmother did. And I called her up and said, Grandma, can we come up and watch Ed Sullivan on your... She said, oh, yes, okay, darling, if you must.
So you remember it vividly.
I remember it pretty vividly, yeah. What I remember, among other things, that as exciting as it was to see that they actually had done a somewhat better job on their records, that they, you know, the live show, I don't know if they were nervous or if they didn't care because the kids were screaming or what have you, but the performance was like I was intrigued that the live performance was not up to the level of the recorded performance of the same songs earlier.
Right. We asked your partner, Mickey Dolenz, where he watched it, and he watched it in his car because he said he had a TV in his car in 1964. Is he lying? Is that true?
It's entirely possible. Mickey is like, you know, being at the leading edge of anything and everything that's going on is very much part of his idea of who he is. When they first had those things on telephones, they had little plastic cards like hotel key cards now, only punched with holes. You dropped it in and it dialed the number so that it was an automatic.
Right.
And his, he had the card for time. In that phone, he woke up in the morning, he slapped the key down, and click, 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 tick, 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 the time. So that he would know what time it was. That was how he learned what time it was.
Wow. That's pretty interesting. So, Peter, I've seen a lot of photos with you and Beatle George. Was that the Beatle you had the most interaction with, George Harrison?
Yes. George was... I first met George before the Monkees were on. I had been chosen for the TV series, and we shot the pilot, and I was back in L.A. We were doing the thing. I was dating Cass's sister at the time, and Leah called Cass, and Cass said, George is coming up. Don't come up.
And don't come
and
up.
And Leah and I looked at each other, and we said, no freaking chance. We're not going to go up there. So we charged up there, and I introduced myself as one of the. Oh, he said, you're one of those guys, are you? So that was when I first met George, and then there was the Monkees Meet the Beatles party at what was then the Speakeasy in London.
Tell us about that.
Well, it was the Monkees Meet the Beatles party at the Speakeasy in London.
And
you are paying attention.
I am paying attention.
Okay. Well, we got there. I think George was there, and so was Paul was there. George and John came in doing the Hare Krishna chant with George on ukulele, only they didn't do Hare Krishna. They went, Mickey, 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 Dickie Dolans, 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 Mickey, 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 Dolans, Mickey, and laughing all the way. And then they came, and we carried on like a house of fire, just basically rocked and rolled. And the next day, George invited me and one of our crew, a guy named Bill Chadwick, who was sort of what we called the B team, out to go visit. We went out to his place. Very quiet. Everything was very quiet. Like this. Dead air. Dead air. Yeah, right. Right. What did the bad microphone say? What did the Pink Panther say when he stepped on the microphone break switch? Dead air.
Peter Tork, ladies and gentlemen.
Dead air, dead air, dead air. I just made that up, and I'll never say it again. Ringo had not been at the party the night before, at the speakeasy party, but George took us over to Ringo's house to say hi. And I instantly got off of Ringo. He's very human. You know, Ringo's just straight ahead. He just phlegmatic, whatever's going on, yeah, one of those, yeah, baby. I mean, if I could do that with a Liverpool accent, I might, but it's really like, yeah, baby, whatever, you know, very, very calm, not in a protective way, but just very relaxed about things, very zen, you might say, and that was that, and then, we were in town, and George invited me to play banjo on Wonderwall. He was working on the soundtrack for Wonderwall, and he invited me to come and play, and I did. You can't hear it on the
album.
You can't hear it on the album, but apparently it's still, and I never have seen the movie.
It's in the film.
But it's in the film.
Yeah, it's on the DVD. They did an updated, you know, nice version of the DVD, and you could hear it.
Yep.
Loud and clear, that banjo.
Good. So, I think it was Paul's banjo.
I was going to ask you
that. Paul had a five-string banjo, which he had strung backwards, of course, being left-handed. Mm-hmm. But it was all right with him if I restrung it. British five-string banjos are different from American. The fifth string, instead of having a tuning peg right in the middle of the neck, it hits a tunnel, and the string goes through a tunnel to a fifth string peg at the regular peg head. Very interesting. Very weird. But it was okay. Got some music in. That's all that mattered.
Very cool. We had John Densmore, The Doors, on a few weeks back, and we were talking about how their first album was number 2 on the Billboard charts, and Sgt. Pepper was number 1. And you had that same experience.
We had exact same experience.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you, you know, what it was like for you, Peter Tork, the musician, not necessarily the actor in The Monkees, but like, you know, when you put your head on the pillow and you went to bed at night and you were looking, thinking to yourself, you know, my record that I play on, sing on, wrote songs on, mm-hmm. is number 2 to the Beatles being number 1. What was just that like in 1967 for a musician to be competing with the Beatles like that?
Oh, well, I it's, you know, when you get first of all, you get a record chart like that, and competition is sort of built in, but you don't feel it. You don't feel competition. You don't think, oh, my God. I mean, you look and you go, well, that's interesting, and that's interesting. And of course, it's such a charge. But I also, at the same time, was aware that a lot of this was, you know, the monkey machinery kept carrying forth. But we really, you know, you talk about Headquarters and you start a whole new topic of conversation.
Headquarters was the Monkees album that they started to play their own instruments.
That's on, right. Yeah,
and it did just as well as the other records, which
better,
is,
I think,
amazing, right?
It sold.
Well,
very
you well. Actually outcharted and outsold the Beatles and the Stones in that magic year of 1967.
So I'm told. I don't.
So Andrew Sandoval has told us.
Our maven of all
our resident
pop and Monkees and Beatles, which was great. You know, all of that's just so much fun. The thing about Headquarters that I actually treasure the most is that it had the longest shelf life, the longest half life of the first three or four Monkees albums. I don't think it sold quite as well as the first two overall, but its decline on the charts was much slower, which to me says that there was something resonant there. There was something there to, for people to sink their teeth into. It's one thing to have a record full of great little bubblegum pop hits. It's another to have a sense that people are listening because there's some kind of a resonance and a relationship to the audience from the musicians that they get because we, you know, put out our blood, sweat, and tears on that album. Here's an interesting little item. When I was talking to Davey about doing some more work, doing another album, Davey said, "Well, Peter," he said, I'm not going to imitate his accent. He said, "You know, you guys worked out the arrangements right there in the studio, so you guys didn't have your final takes until, you know, take 53 or 67 or something," he said. And then he mimed playing the tambourine. He said, I've got my part down on the first take.
Because it's a little easier.
Because it's a little, because you have the tambourine part. So, but like I said, you know, the fact that the headquarters had a longer shelf life, a slower decline, says to me that there was something extra about that album as opposed to the ones that we felt we didn't have much to do with.
And how did a folk guy like you feel about psychedelic music that was becoming such, you know, the thing in 67? Did you dig it?
I mean, if it blows my mind, I'm all about it. You know, it's not about my saying I'm a folk yet. Well, it's a... I didn't much care for rock and roll when it first came out because I'd been studying piano and I knew all your classical music and I knew harmonic changes and when you get a song where you know the changes, let me just show you what I'm talking about. We're gonna do this.
By the way, while Peter was talking, he switched chairs and now has a guitar in his hand, and you didn't hear a note. Yeah, that's beautiful.
You know, you figure there's not really a whole lot of harmonic interest in a song like that.
Right.
So it took a long time for rock and roll to get through to me. But once it did, I was all about it. I was fine. You know, because one thing you have to remember, there was the 50s explosion of the rockabilly, rock and roll, soul rock, Little Richard, Elvis, all those guys. And then it went into very precipitous decline. And what was left was, how much is that doggy in the window?
Safe, yeah.
Ooh, talk about vanilla.
That song is pretty
flavorless. White. It's pretty white. And the same thing goes for Christmas.
Exactly.
Hold on, it's broken. Jeez.
And then the Beatles came along having, you know, with time delay, having heard the 50s rock thing and just, you know, and then the music went across the ocean to Liverpool where all the sailors docked and the kids there went for it big time, you know. And suddenly, so we were in folk music because pop was nothing. And suddenly here come the Beatles and the music is interesting and varies and changes and goes places. Can we play one? She Loves You.
We can play that.
Just explosive for me. Because here's one thing before we go into it.
Yeah.
George Martin talked about the Beatles doing, well, they did a, they said, we're doing a sixth, which is, you know, just a particular sound. And George, ha ha ha, sixth. Well, he's orchestrally, he didn't think a sixth was anything new. But when you hear the sixth on She Loves You, it is so exciting because of the context. It was so, you know, these kids were so jazzed. You listen to these, try to do what they did back then, and you're exhausted after about the first six bars because they were just so, the song that they ever did that made me put the hair up on the back of my head. Hit it.
She Loves
what
You.
What an interval.
On your Father's Day Sunday as we hang with the great Peter Tork of the Monkees, who's got a great one-man show called In This Generation, My Life in the Monkees, and so much, much more.
Also, while we're on the subject, the following Saturday, the 22nd,
yes,
me and my blues band and I, will be at the
Long Beach Bayou
and Blues Festival. We go on at 7:30. It's in Long Beach. You know, check your local website.
Yeah.
And then I rejoin my mates of famous yore days. We're in San Diego. Let's see. Okay, August 11th in San Diego at Humphreys, 13th at Terrace Theater in Long Beach, mm-hmm. California.
We're giving away tickets.
Oh, boy, good for you.
Do you need a couple?
Yeah.
I think can help you out.
Yeah, I got more requests than I know what to do. Wednesday, August the 14th, up in Saratoga at the Mountain Winery, and the 15th at the Uptown Theater in Napa, California.
And
so come and bring your money.
Peter has agreed to take a couple of phone calls, so if you're... got a question that you've always wanted to ask Peter Tork. Now's the time. 800-955-KLOS. Why did you wear your belt on the left side?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I actually thought I was doing it, A, to be weird, B, to get the belt buckle out of the way of the guitar. And about, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, somebody said, yeah, that's what the bad boys did in high school, right? I went, oh, my God, it's true.
That's right. That's what I always figured.
I've forgotten the bad boys did in high school. So.
We're going to take a quick break. And
the rude boys.
If you're lucky... Peter Tork will play a song on his guitar. Stick around. Don't
or maybe
go
not.
Buying a new home can be exciting.
Hi, team. We're the Monkees.
Did you tell them about the TV show yet, Mike?
No, man. I was going to sneak it in. You got to be very subtle about these things.
You're going to tell them that we'll be on NBC TV starting September 12th at 7:30 p.m. in colors.
Cool. What's more fun than a barrel full of monkeys?
Gosh, a Rooney, Mike. I don't know. What is more fun than a barrel full of monkeys?
A train full of monkeys. Dig. KHJ's chartered the last train to Clarksville, and they're going to take hundreds of lucky listeners on a trip September the 11th.
Brutal.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. The KHJ happening to wrap up the summer of 66.
And us monkeys want to meet you at the station in Clarksville.
Yeah, each of us will give away a color TV set.
So enter now. All you do is send a postcard to Monkey Trip, Box 38130, Hollywood. Starting Tuesday morning, the bus jocks draw a winner every hour, and each winner gets to bring a friend.
Mail your card in and ride with the monkeys.
On the last train to Clarksville.
That's a nice. We didn't do it in German, though.
No.
Er liebt dich, ja, er liebt dich.
Did you have to do any other songs in different languages?
I didn't do any of that, you know. I wasn't. You know, Mickey was the lead singer. Make him do it.
Right. You didn't have to do anything. Nice, Peter. We're hanging with Peter Tork of the Monkees, who's got a great one-man show called In This Generation, My Life in the Monkees, and so much more. Sold out tomorrow night at the Grammy Museum. Congratulations.
But Peter Tork and Shoe Suede Blues.
Yes, you can still see them 7:30 at the Long Beach Bio and Blues Festival.
And then the Monkees are going out.
Yes.
We'll be in San Diego and Long Beach and Saratoga, California, Napa, California, all in the middle of April, of August, rather, excuse me. The second thing to go. All right.
Hey, you want to take a quick phone call?
Sure.
Yeah?
Let's go to
line one. I believe Peter is on the line. Peter, are you there?
I'm here. Hello, Peter. I'm Peter 2.
Hi, Peter 2. I'm just Peter.
Peter 1.
You're Peter 1. There you go. Hey, Peter, I got a question for you.
Hit it.
What was it like doing the Pizza Hut commercial with Ringo?
Fabulous. It's fabulous. Ringo, I was saying, you know, he's a great guy to be with. I have a little story about that. One of the shots was the three monkeys come in. Ringo says, I'll tell the lads it's time to eat your pizza crust first. And Mickey, Davey, and I walk in, and Ringo says, wrong lads. And so we're setting up the shot with Ringo at the drums, and Mickey, Davey, and I behind him with a piece of pizza in our hands. Ringo said something droll. I said, Ringo, we're the comedians. You're just a musician. We'll do the humor. Ringo said, I've been funny. People have laughed at me jokes.
How did that happen? Did you get like a phone call from
somebody
saying,
yeah, they
got an
offer. You want to do such as how you pay these bucks? They do the, you're just kidding? A commercial with Ringo for good bucks? Huh? You bet.
Hey, you get to see the Ringo exhibit now that you're going to the Grammy Museum. Have you seen it?
I just heard it.
It's pretty cool. They got the drum set from the Ed Sullivan Show and the rooftop, the Let It Be thing, and a bunch of cool outfits that Ringo wore over the years. Very nice.
Did they have a Sgt. Pepper outfit?
I believe it's there.
Yeah?
Oh. Not too shabby.
Want
to take another quick call?
Sure.
One was so quick. Let's go to line three or four, Mark.
Three.
Scott, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, Chris. Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
Good.
Mark says he's doing good.
I didn't forget you. Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, thanks.
I got a question for you. I know you guys went through a difficult time with Davey being gone and doing the last tour from last year. What was it like to do the tour without Davey Jones?
Well, for the most part, it was just, you know, it was business as usual. Got to get up there, got to sing the song, find your part, find your mark. What's the thing? What am I playing on this tune? And, you know, what's going on? Last year we had four separate segments where we at least noted Davey. One of them was his dance sequence from Head, which, you know, I mean, I always thought Davey was about, could have been maybe the greatest, second greatest Fred Astaire ever. But
Axl Rose stole his dance.
So we
ever,
that dance,
ever
yeah.
noticed that?
Yeah, that dance. But on the Head sequence, the Daddy Song sequence, he did some real hoofing, real genuine, you know, and I thought it was really very good. Tony Basil choreographed that. So there would be times when we would just be plugging along, and then there'd be times when, you know, there was somebody missing. And particularly during the, we would do, when we did Daydream Believer, we figured none of us can sing. None of the three of us, neither Mickey, Mike, nor I, should or could sing Daydream Believer. So we got somebody from the audience.
You were taking people out of the audience.
Yeah, we were taking people out of the audience. After a while, there were people who were, you know, me, pick me, and like waving signs. You know.
they knew what to expect.
The word was out. The word was out. And I'll tell you that there are times when I miss him a lot to this day. I'm sorry, he's gone.
Yeah, definitely a loss. Do you want to play a song now? I see you're holding that guitar nice and tight.
Yeah, well, it's a slippery chair. You know what I was thinking is, I mentioned that there was a moment in rock and roll when everything was the same chords, it seemed like. And then this other song came along that had some very interesting chord changes in it. And so I'm going to do this. This is from the 50s. It's I Want You, I Need You, I Love You by the late, great king of rock and roll, Mr. Mervyn Schwartz. Oh, hold me close, hold me tight, make me thrill with delight. Let me know where I stand from the start. I want you, I need you, I love you with all my heart. Every time that you're near, all my cares disappear. Darling, you're all that I'm living for. I want you, I need you, I love you more and more. Well, I thought I could live without romance until you came to me. But now I know that I will go on loving you eternally. Won't you please be my home? Never leave me alone, 'cause I die every time we're apart. I want you, I need you, I love you with all my heart.
Peter Tark, ladies and gentlemen. On a Sunday morning, Father's Day. Beautiful. Thank you, Peter Tork.
Thank you, Chris.
So, Peter was kind enough to pick some of his favorite Beatles songs. We're going to play one right now called Lady Madonna. Why did you want to hear this one?
Oh, yeah, something about, I don't know, the boogie. Suddenly there's this boogie-woogie left hand from back in the old 40s jump boogie days, jump swing.
You ever hear a song called Bad Penny Blues? That's the song this was... Humphrey Littleton.
Brushes. He said Brushes can be very exciting, but you know, it was like my mama used, hey, what you do it, so we have to do it. What to do is the way how to do it. Like that. She was just all over that stuff. Me too. I got just a great... Blues had a baby and they called it rock and roll.
Peter Tork, Lady Madonna, Breakfast with the Beatles.
Hey, tumble over there, but still nice to
hear. New group with the Monkees is called the Jimi Hendrix Experience, and they've joined the Monkees concert tour of the U.S. They weren't in there in the very beginning. It's just over the past couple of days. Now, when Keener brings you the Monkees in Detroit on July the 29th, the Jimi Hendrix Experience will be with the Monkees. Jimmy's 22 years old and was discovered in Greenwich Village, New York, and invited by the manager of the Animals to audition for a new group being formed in England, and it happened, and the Jimi Hendrix Experience is the name of the group, and they've had a couple of top 10 hits in England. Hey Joe is one of them, and the Purple Haze is the other, and this is their first appearance in America. So a new group, Jimi Hendrix Experience, traveling with the Monkees.
Well, let me tell you one thing, son. Nobody ever lends money to a man with a sense of humor.
I love that line. I used to be in a band called Dramarama, and you know the inside of the record, you know, where you can write little things, usually there's catalog numbers or something. We put that on one, Nevermore, and then you flip it over and then had the, it's great. Where did that line come from, obviously?
I have no idea.
What did it mean, though?
I have no idea. I have no idea. As far as I know, it was just, you know, Bob Rafelson and Jack Nicholson wrote and produced that movie.
Sure.
You're talking about the Monkey Head, with the Head. And as far as I know, they just thought it was quirky and weird and funny in the middle of it, and they just, okay, let's go for it.
I love it. We just heard Jimi Hendrix, by the way, doing Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
I was expecting him to do Billy Shears, too. What would you do if I sang out of tune?
So, speaking of Sergeant Pepper, I was going to talk about Jimi Hendrix, but you've talked about that a million times. It seems like all band members got Sergeant Pepper before it came out, no matter who you're talking about. Yeah, we had this early copy of Sgt. Pepper, and we were listening to it going, wow. Was that the case with you? Did you hear Sgt. Pepper before it was released in
shops? I don't think so. I think it was about the same time. All I know is that David Crosby had a copy and a brilliant stereo, and I went over to his house and turned it on. He wasn't there. He said, yeah, you can go on in. And I just...
Well, you just crawl through a window or something?
No, I mean, you know, I knew how to...
He
left a key where he knew I could get it. And I just listened to it through. And, you know, at the end, the last thing that happens is that orchestra hits that chord, and they hang, and they hang, and they hang. Somebody said you could hear a chair scrape in the middle of someplace. And hang. It was just so powerful. It's so wonderful. Somebody else said that it's a concept album. You know, it's all a concept album because they said so. Otherwise, it wasn't going to be one. But of course, it's
you just have to say something's a concept album. Headquarters was a concept album, wasn't it?
No. Yeah, the concept was, let's get through this before we all die of fright.
Peter Tork, In This Generation, My Life in the Monkees, and so much more. So tell us about the one-man show. What, I mean, visuals, music?
There's video. We have the Royal Canadian Air Force flyby.
That's nice.
Some elephants, giraffes, just the usual stuff.
So you got the big trucks outside. It's like, you know, it's like the circus comes to town.
It's a huge show. I stand there with my guitar and banjo and a video screen. That's all there is to it.
How many have you done so far?
I don't even know. 12, something like that. 10, 15.
Really?
I'm informed.
So what's it like,
he who knows,
as you get going when doing these things? You get more comfortable with
sure.
it. Do you start adding things to it? Do you change the show at all?
No, subtracting is the problem. Yeah, I you know, we were shooting for an hour and a half schedule, and I can't bring it in under an hour 40, and it's much more often an hour 50 or 55, just because I get, a friend of mine says if they laugh at my jokes, I tell more.
Well, that's usually the case with most people, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, I have a pair of tickets to see the Monkees for a lucky listener. They're playing at the Long Beach Terrace Theater on August 13th. Let's ask a quiz question, though. I got one here.
Do you?
Let's see if you can get it.
What is that?
That's our quiz tones. It's from the Beatles cartoon. Okay. They know when they hear that. See, look, they're already calling. We don't even have to ask the question. Okay. They just call.
Okay.
Anybody out there that can name the Monkees episode directed by Peter Tork, you get the tickets. 800-955-KLOS. Name the Monkees episode directed by Peter Tork. Peter, I noticed...
I
noticed towards the end of the Monkees, there were special guests that started to come on. Yep. All of a sudden, you saw Tim Buckley on the show, or Frank Zappa on the show.
Right.
And it seemed like each...
Charlie Smalls was...
Right, each Beatle... Yep. Each Beatle. I host a Beatle. I host the Beatle show.
Yeah.
Each Monkey got to pick somebody, but who did you... What happened?
I wanted Janis Joplin. We never got around to it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, would have been Janis.
That would have been a mind blower.
Wouldn't that have been something?
Because it was so great. All of a sudden, you see Frank Zappa on the Monkees.
I thought that the next logical step for the Monkees was to do a variety show. Now a variety show with skits. Just give us, you know, some good writers and some good musicians, and you know, just and have only have the rock acts on, not like the old established, you know, a Vegas crew.
Because you guys were in that time where still variety shows had rock
Tommy
bands,
Smothers and Brothers show was on about that.
And another thing to think about. When the Monkees were on TV, you know, 66, 67, television really wasn't around that long, if you think about it, right? Television only been on for like 15 years
or
so.
Yes, well, actually, Mike did some research on this. If you count the Nielsen ratings as the beginning of television, that was 1950. And the, so make television 16 years old, just about as old as our fans.
Isn't that amazing?
That's astounding.
If you go back 16 years from today, I mean, right? Can you?
You want to hear something even weirder? Mickey worked this one out. You're going to be coming to like the 45th or 6th or 7th, I think, anniversary of the Monkees if you come to his show this year. Can you imagine an act 47 years? If you'd had an act 47 years old when we first hit the air in 66, you'd be watching shows from 1919.
I always say if you were at Woodstock in 1969 and you were hanging out with everybody loved the same music, right? Everybody loved Hendrix. Or say, hey man, I was listening to this album that was made 40 years ago, back in, you know, 1939, 1929. You would have laughed. No one would think that was cool. But today, you listen to a Led Zeppelin record and say, hey, man, this came out you know, 40 years ago, and it still sounds good.
Yeah.
You want to take a quiz question live? Let's see what the audience is thinking. They usually get it in the first couple of questions. You got an answer to our quiz question? The Monkees episode directed by Peter Tork. Do you know the name?
Is it In This Generation?
It is not, but that is the name of his one-man show.
Thanks for thinking of me in that department anyway. Sorry, you won't see.
Hey,
sorry,
you know the name? Do you know the name of the Monkees episode directed by Peter Tork? What is it?
The Monkees Mind Their Matter.
Oh, sounds pretty confident to me. That's it. Congratulations. You're going to see the Monkees. What's your name?
My name is Robert.
Robert. Beetle Robert. Where are you calling us from, Robert?
Mar Vista.
Who's your favorite monkey?
That would be Peter.
Thank you.
Mine too. Right.
We're going to put you on hold, all right?
Very good.
Get your info. Want to play something? Go ahead, play something off the top of your head. Anything.
You know what? Okay,
come on.
I'll do this. You guys, the audience, everybody sings.
Okay.
Do they run, they run, they do they run, run. She hangs out. She hangs out. How old you say your sister was? Sing out. Sister was how old did you say your little sister was?
Sister was
you know you better keep an eye on her.
Eye on her.
Ow. Do they run, they run, they do they run. She hangs out. Well, she hangs out. Hangs out every night. Every night. You best get down here on the double before she gets her pretty little self in trouble. She's a so fine, she's a so fine. How old you say your sister was? Sing out.
Sister was.
How old did you say your pretty little sister was?
Sister was.
You know you better keep an eye on her. She hangs out. Do they run, they run, they do they run, run.
Peter Tork, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, cats and kittens, live right here on Breakfast with the Beatles. We're going to take a quick break. Back with more. Stick around.
Hi, this is Mickey Dolenz, and you're listening to Chris Carter and Breakfast with the Beatles.
Bring me in.
Hey, Chuck.
Hi, that was Peter Tork and Chu Sway Blues, The Last Train to Clarksville, the famous Old Monkey song. Chris, out back to you.
Why, thank you, Peter Tork. You're listening to Breakfast with the Beatles on Father's Day 2013. Oh,
yeah. Happy birthday.
That was nice, that version. Birthday.
Thank you. Thank you. Oily. I call it oily. I say the monkeys meet black velvet.
I like it. Very, yeah. Very cool. Thank you. I want to ask you real quick about a friend of the monkeys, Harry Nilsson. It was his birthday yesterday. Yep. Tell me about Harry. Did you have any time to hang with Harry? I know you weren't part of the big L.A., you know,
big Nilsson.
But you would have been here with
Nilsson,
Harry.
The Nilsson-Lennon long weekend year.
Those Hollywood vampires,
The vampires, well, it was with the Hollywood, well, they were the, actually, I was on a softball team called the Hollywood Vampires.
Yeah, that was with Albert Brooks and all those guys.
Alice
Cooper.
Alice Cooper named the band, and his man Bobby Brown and I were the battery. It was a great time. We had a lovely time. We were the second best team in the league, and consistently.
Well, there were only three teams in the league.
No, come on, there were five. Ed Begley Jr. used to hang around. He cut out a bunch of bubblegum slabs in the shape of a V and had photographs of all of us in a wrapper. So he really made little bubblegum cards for us all. It was really wonderful.
And I believe there is a Harry Nilsson box set a-coming. Is that right, Andrew?
That's correct.
When is that coming?
It's coming in a couple of weeks.
From Sony, 17
CDs.
17 CDs. We know who to call if we need a copy, Peter.
It ain't me. Harry, who wrote Daddy's Song and a number of other things, I mean, the first time we heard him, we knew he was really good. There was just, you know, he was really special right away. And I can't say that I ever got to hang much with him, but it was, it was just great to have another really excellent writer with us. One of the things about the Monkees as a overall phenomenon, you have to say, is they have one of the great collections of songwriters. You got Carole King and Neil Diamond and Neil Sedaka all writing songs for the
Monkees.
Amazing. It's a great songbook. And it's not false pride on my part.
Absolutely not. When you go back and, you know, sometimes for younger, you know, fans, I'll put together a little Monkees compilation, and you'll find yourself, you know, filling up the whole CD, all 80 minutes, and you still have extra songs. That's how many great songs the Monkees have.
It's a fabulous songbook, really. One of the greats. Very lucky to be part of that.
Hey, Peter, excuse me.
Chrissy.
I knew that was coming.
You stepped in it.
We have one more pair of tickets to see the Monkees at the Long Beach Terrace
Theater.
Good,
let's give them away.
Should we do it just for free, no quiz question, just take somebody who really wants to go?
We're hurting for time over here.
All right, let's pick a number. Somebody pick a number. Andrew?
Number 9.
We'll take the ninth caller at 800-955-KLOS. Peter Tork, thank you so much.
Am I leaving? I don't want to go.
It happens. We have to get to the AC/DC, Aerosmith, and Black Sabbath, okay?
Oh, my God.
Peter Tork.
I'm leaving.
In this generation, my life in the Monkees, and so much more.
Don't forget the Shoe Suede Blues dates and the Monkees coming back and all the rest of the good stuff. Check it out.
Absolutely. Peter Tork, thank you so much.
Thank
my
you,
name
Chris.
Is Chris Carter, and it's been a pleasure hanging with you.